Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's your regular weekly podcast, and I don't even mention the days anymore. Have you noticed I've not got sucked into mentioning Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because now we know that people are downloading it every day of the week, every hour of the week, because it happens all over the world. Anyway, now you know the podcast always starts as well with me saying hello, Jack Benyon.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Tony Simpson and Jack Benyon.
Hello, and we have the massive loving in the first 40 seconds, and then the gloves are off, and it all gets quite bitchy about hair products normally at this point, but this week, I am not even going to mention hair products. You want me to tell you what I'm going to talk to you about this week, boys?
Cinnamon and coffee.
Not cinnamon and coffee, although, right, I'd completely forgot about that. Ryan Champion sends us probably the most middle-class photograph of him making his coffee at home with his coffee percolator and his jar of cinnamon. No, I'm not going to talk about that, but it may well come up a bit later on in the programme. I'm going to talk to you about toothpaste.
Right.
You've gone very quiet.
Yeah, tumbleweed.
Yeah, you've gone very, very quiet. The reason why I'm going to talk to you about... I'm actually not going to talk to you about it. All I'm going to say is that Rich Miller's going to be coming up a bit later on in the programme. And he shared a moment in a bathroom at M Sport with Henning Solberg.
Wow.
And it involved toothpaste, and it is a cracking story. And I'm not going to say, it's not fair of me to say it, but as stories go from an M Sport point of view and from Henning's point of view, I would have put everything on my own not predicting this particular story. I will give you the precursor to the story. Henning had decided to go and see M Sport without telling anybody and got a cab from Manchester Airport to M Sport. He just decided he wanted to go and see them. So he got on a plane and got a cab there, and he didn't bring anything with him. So I'm not going to say any more than that, but there you go. Anyway, folks, that's coming up a bit later on. So we're going to have Rich Milner, Grizzly, as he was nicknamed, coming all the way from the Service Park in Rally Argentina. We had a bit of a cheeky catch up yesterday, which would have been Wednesday, our time. So there you go. Anyway, without further ado, we are doing a retrospective look, I suppose, again this week. We will get back to normal in a week or two. There's a few things going on at the moment, which we're going to talk about a bit later on. Obviously, it's the Pirelli Rally next week. But once the Pirelli Rally is out the way, we'll kind of get back to kind of previewing the headlines before you see them. So we are back in the realms of looking at them retrospectively with Jack. And Jack, one thing that does scream out this week from Motorsport News is the images which we've all seen by now anyway, because they were on Facebook within minutes of them happening, of this Citroën.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly social media has changed things, hasn't it? And, you know, I guess back in the day you'd be picking up your copy of Motorsport News or Autosport or whatever you want to read and check out the pictures of the latest cars coming out. But now we see them almost instantly, don't we? But yeah, we've got Toyota potentially testing their car this week. Obviously, we write Motorsport News on a Monday, so we can't actually guarantee that the car's tested this week, but we're pretty sure it is. And then we've got pictures of the Citroën out as well, which is great. And the car looks quite good, I think. I don't know what you two think about the look of the car, but to me, it's quite a looker by the looks of things.
I remember just before Ryan jumps in, we had wallpaper like that when I was a kid. That's the only thing that reminds me. It kind of reminds me of a downstairs loo. Wallpaper, sorry, that sounds really wrong. Right, what should you make of it, by the way?
I think it's going to be quite an aggressive looking road car, isn't it? I mean, obviously this is Citroën have now split the Citroën and DS brands, so this is obviously based on a Citroën product that we haven't seen yet, haven't seen the road going version, but it looks like it's going to be quite an exciting thing, doesn't it?
I'm a bit confused by that, mate. And I'll be honest with you, if I'm confused by it, that's not difficult, granted. But so where does the DS brand go now?
Well, I think now what Citroën want is DS to be their Lexus to Citroën's Toyota, if that follows. I think that's their long-term aim. And that's why also DS has gone racing, because they see that as a bit more fitting with the DS brand and Citroën going rallying.
I see. Jack, you mentioned Toyota. I'm slightly concerned that we still haven't seen anything yet and we haven't heard anything, because as you've just said, you know, we know what the jungle drums are like now. You know, that image of the guys testing the Citroën was out within minutes. Which leads me to believe that there's a Toyota not really turned the wheel yet.
Well, you know, you can't guarantee either way, really. But I mean, with Citroen, we had people invited to their test, which was not the case with Toyota. So maybe some of the social media stuff we've seen coming out been coming from people who are invited to the test or people who've gained prior knowledge of where the test might be beforehand, whereas Toyota maybe have been a bit more discreet about where their test might be, or have not invited as many people to their test. But yeah, it is. I don't think it's concerning. I just think it's it's something to watch out for. You know, in a week or two, if you haven't seen a picture, that might be the time to start getting worried. But I think at the minute, maybe it's just been a bit of an exclusive test, and they've managed to keep everything under wraps, maybe.
Yeah, right. I probably the same point to you. We all know people, and we all get, you know, whispers and things and everything. I haven't heard a thing.
No, I mean, we talked about this at length before Christmas, didn't we? Before before Tommy Mäkinen was confirmed about what Toyota was doing, where it was going, and we had all the announcements, and now it seems to have gone quiet again, hasn't it? You know, we heard George Donaldson was likely to be going there. That doesn't look likely to be happening now. TMG are supposedly still in the loop doing the engines and such like, but why on earth wouldn't we just keep running that prototype they'd built? You know, why didn't Tommy Mäkinen, if it is all one company and all for the greater good and everything else, they had a prototype up and running, why didn't Mäkinen take that and run that? You know, surely there's some information to be gained from that. We're back to knowing nothing, really, aren't we? And like you said, it would just be nice to know what's going on, because we're still hearing rumours that they might move base. I mean, what was the last one? They were talking about Estonia or Latvia or somewhere else. Moving from Finland. So there's still, again, a lot of question marks.
I know there's a lot of, I don't know whether you've heard this, Jack, but I've been told by a couple of people that there's been a lot of rebranding going on at Tommy Mäkinen Racing. In fact, almost Tommy Mäkinen Racing doesn't exist now.
No, I hadn't heard that, but, you know, it's all on the grapevine, like Ryan said before. You know, we're not hearing a lot coming out at the minute. You know, I'm sure that'll change. You know, with Toyota, we seem to get bursts of news. You know, stuff will come through in sort of big packages, if you like. And at the minute, we're just having a bit of a quiet patch, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks. I mean, they need to start testing soon, because the homologation deadline's not too far away for next year, and they'll be having a struggle to get the car ready if they don't get it out soon. So I'm sure they'll be out very soon. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
There's still been big concerns, hasn't there, guys, with regards to, you know, the safety element keeps on coming out. There's been some concerns. I've seen some images as well of the Volkswagen, albeit the slave car, but, you know, Marcus Grönholm was certainly quite vocal about his experiences in it.
Yeah, it's like you said, we talked a few weeks ago about the safety side of it, but it does seem that now slowly people in the sport are starting to think about it more and more, because inherently these cars are going to be an awful lot faster. And particularly at high speed, you know, they're going to have significant aerodynamics. I know the FIA are sort of legislating against the aerodynamics. So although they've allowed the big aerodynamics, I think they're going to be limited in terms of the shape and exactly what they can do with the rear wing, so that it doesn't get out of hand in terms of an aerodynamic arms race. But they're still going to be significantly faster. So it's definitely something that that everybody in the WRC has to bear in mind.
Jack, I guess what where I'm going with this as well is that you guys run a story this week on page 15 with regards to Rally Argentina, which obviously is upon us. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We've got Rich Milner coming up a bit later on, but officials promise a safe event despite warning.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Argentina and Poland, I think it was last year, received formal warnings for their spectator control. So those two events are definitely under the spotlight this year, because if they receive another formal warning, then they'll be ejected from the calendar. So we saw some incidents last year, didn't we, with Hayden Padden in his Hyundai. You know, I don't know how much that could have been controlled, but in general terms, Argentina does seem to be one of the events where they do have trouble controlling safety spectators and all that sort of stuff. So I know Michelle Mouton went through the stage. We ran a story in Emma last month, went through the stages and asked for some changes to be made, and, mm-hmm. and hopefully her changes have been implemented and the rally's safe. That's all you can hope for, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think I watched the excellent WRC Plus bits and pieces. I must admit, I'm a massive fan of it, and we watched me and my other half sat down and watched the preview to Rally Argentina last night, it was, and just looking at the footage of that and looking at the close proximity people were to, you know, when I'm thinking, which Hyundai was it that went it wasn't. Was it Thierry that clipped the back wheel?
Yeah, no, it's Thierry and Andreas Mikkelsen both did that last year on the Power
Tour. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. You just look at how close these guys are. And you know, again, I suppose we factor in, you know, if we factored in another 20 mile an hour into that, if the cars are quicker with more downforce, yada 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 yada, I know we're covering all ground, but how much further on would that car go when it's clipped the back wheel off?
Yeah, it's very difficult to. What some of us might be guilty of is just sort of looking at things with a lot of excitement. You know, we're all rally fans and we all want to see the cars going quicker. You know, we all want to see the cars looking more aggressive. You know, that's exactly what we want. But everyone needs to also step back and just think a little bit about safety implementation of the safety, how it works with the cars going quicker, and whether we're actually factoring this into events, because, you know, it is a difficult one. Like I said, we all want to see the cars going quicker, and, you know, quick is always better for a spectator, isn't it? But
yeah, I think, as somebody rightly pointed out the other week, though, do you ever watch a World Rally Car now and go, that's slow? It could have been Mark that said, you know, yes, we want them more spectacular, but do we really need them much quicker? I'd agree that maybe a little bit of an uplift in power, which they've got, is great. But then leave it at that. Don't start giving them more grip and active sensitives again to help control it. And it seems not only are we giving them the cars more power, but also more capability, which will mean they go around corners faster. And all for more spectacular cars, but a little bit more power, great, but I don't know if we need to make them much faster, if that makes sense.
Right. No, we all know we've got the fastest rally cars that have ever been produced, and if you want to make them more spectacular, surely taking downforce away is the way to do that, not by giving them more power and more downforce.
If I can just interject with something, in all seriousness, I think what's changing as well is that, you know, and this is going to be the trade-off between having more manufacturers coming in, because, you know, we could take the current crop of the top 10 drivers, put them all in the same car, and we'd find out who the best driver was. You know, you could put them in a family saloon car and basically say, right, go and drive them as fast as possible, and you'd find out who the best driver is. Now, what manufacturers want to do is to showcase their skills and showcase the technology and the developments and the clever things that they do. And I suppose, right, you know, you work for car manufacturers actually doing this. You show people stuff that goes on with new brands and new ideas and new technologies and things like that. But surely this is the trade-off for us having more manufacturers.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because if you allow freedom with technology, which is what the manufacturers want to learn from, then costs go through the roof. I mean, we're seeing it in the World Endurance Championship at the minute and Le Mans. The cars are incredible, and all the front running cars, the Audi, the Toyota, and the Porsche have different powertrains, different engines, and different battery regeneration and everything else. But they're getting onto Formula One budgets now, which, you know, is ridiculous. And then Formula One in itself, you know, has been so highly regulated that you're getting designers like Adrian Newey saying, well, you know, it's a bit boring now. But if you start to give them freedom, then the costs shoot up. So it's the same for rallying. It's a difficult one to play off. I guess a lot of the manufacturers are in it for image reasons, you know, to promote the image. But nonetheless, like you said, yeah, you do want to see developments coming back to the road cars, but it is difficult to allow that development without costs going through the roof.
Now, before I want to kind of crack on with regards to Rally Argentina, we'll talk more about that in a second. But a nice piece here, Jack, with regards to Yari Matti. Obviously, he really does need Ogier now to have another problem event, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, we've discussed this on the show many times, haven't we, about the whole Latvala Ogier dynamic, and it is getting to the point where Latvala needs Ogier to have some trouble. But at the same point, this time last year, Latvala was 62 points behind, not 50. So technically, he's closer than last year, but is that a win for Latvala? I'm not so sure. Being 50 points behind is still a hefty margin, and it's going to be difficult for him to make it back up. But, you know, we all know how talented Yari is, and when he puts a rally together, he's very difficult to beat. So, you know, you don't know what can happen over the rest of the season, but it's going to be, it's nice that it's a bit closer than last year at least, but how much closer it is remains to be seen, really, doesn't it?
I'll tell you what's going to be fascinating, guys, is that, again, just picking up on a piece on the same page, page 15 of Motorsport News this week, with regards to VW on the verge of consecutive wins. And I think we, again, we forget about the manufacturer juggernaut almost sometimes as well with Sebastian Ogier. You know, his wingmen, we've just been talking about, of course, Jari Matti, and obviously Andreas as well. You know, between the three of them, aside from the driver standings and points and things like that, you know, we've got a very, very strong brand that is, I think it was it Rally Argentina was the last time they all failed to finish, is that right? Or something? I could be slightly off on that. By all means, one of you two pick me up on it.
I think didn't one of the cars rally two in Argentina last year and technically finished, but yeah, they all had problems, didn't they, in Argentina? They definitely all had problems. OJ and Latvala definitely went out. I can't remember whether Mickelson rallied soon and finished or whether he retired as well, but yeah, difficult one that.
And now,
I have to get my memory books out for that one.
Yeah, you'd have to have a look. Now, again, we talk about, and listen, I understand probably just as much, if not more than you two on this side, because of what I do, in real life at times. But the entry for this particular event, and it always was a tough event with regards to the logistics of it, is probably what, I think, as a standalone, it's probably more expensive than the Mexico to do. And it's certainly, I think Australia runs it close, but Rally Argentina has always been one of the more expensive events to do logistically. It hasn't got a massive depth of entry. You're looking at 24 entries for WRC, and then you're at the national event, which, funny enough, the first car in the national event is a blast from the past for you gents. Federico Viagra, or Viagra, as I used to call him. I always found that a hard one. But anyway, he is running in these Maxi Rally cars, right? Now, again, I seem to remember these coming about. Are these the cars that effectively are a silhouette with kind of Evo running gear, or have I got that wrong?
No, you might have it right. I couldn't tell you on that, to be honest. I think, like, well, I remember something about it. As you said, there's the silhouette bodies, but no, I don't know. Honest answer. All
right. Well, thanks for your insight. Anyway, moving on.
That's harsh, Tony.
If you give me a little bit of warning, then I might find an answer for you. But,
you're meant to be the oracle, right? You're the selling point. When I try and sell this podcast to people, which I do on a regular basis, I always try and find us more listeners, more people to come in and support us and everything else. Right, I always say, yeah, but I've got Ryan Champion on one side, who is just like the oracle. What he doesn't know isn't worth knowing. I've got Jack Benyon, who's like the young terrier in the sport at the moment. If he doesn't know about a story, he'll sniff it out, he'll find it out, and I feel like I'm blessed. I've got so much kind of knowledge, youth and experience around me, and I throw something very simple at you, like a Maxi Rally car, and you just hold up, you know, white flag, right?
Well, you could have made a small thing of it and moved on, or just blow it up into a huge point.
I could have done, but, you know, I suppose, listening back to the last couple of podcasts where you've tried to drop me in it with pronunciations and stuff, this is my revenge.
Moving on.
Now,
I'll do it this week, Tony. Moving on.
Thanks, mate. Thank you. Now, we're going to have Grizzly coming up. Dick Milner, and we kind of went through their drivers. Now, one thing, you guys have published a story about it this week, that and Rich has kind of, well, said it word for word without even reading your article, that Eric Kamali does need to finish Rally Argentina.
Oh yeah, well, we discussed this a couple of months ago, I think, didn't we, after Mexico. Wilson was saying that he definitely needs to finish the event, and you know, it's not just from an M Sport point of view. I think it's from a family point of view as well, because he really needs to get that finish just to bring up his confidence. And I'm sure you and Ryan, or with your love of psychology, will have a better idea of what actually finishing an event can do to your confidence when you've retired from a few in a row. But he is learning, and I do think he has got talent. But yeah, he needs to get to the end of some events, and he can't keep tearing up World Rally cars, because that's not sustainable over a season.
Right. He's got to go back to basics. I think that's it. It's like anything. You go back to the beginning and almost start again. You almost have to learn the job again. When something goes so unsuccessful so early on, you've got to go back to basics and stuff like that. But is there a danger that you can lose any kind of pace you've got just for the sake of it, just to finish a rally. And then what good is it then?
Yeah, exactly that. When you're in this sort of downward spiral, if you like, it's difficult to know what to do for the best, because he hasn't set electric pace, and then he's had an accident. Even when Chris Meek was in this position, at least when Chris Meek was in the position, he was setting incredible times. Whereas, you know, Eric Camilli's yet to show us lightning pace, but still going off the road. And, funnily enough, I had it written here to talk about anyway. The pressure's on him, but I feel for him as well, because what do you do? All you can actually do is go out and do your best and just believe in yourself and listen, make good pace notes, listen to the pace notes and drive accordingly. Because if he starts thinking about it, exactly like you said, his pace is going to drop and he's just likely to have an accident then anyway. So it's a really, really difficult position for him. And, for his good and for the good of the sport, it'd be nice to see him get a result. But there's a lot of pressure on him this weekend.
Gents, I'm going to come to you first, Jack. I'm just looking at the entry list now for Rally Argentina. And again, it does have some quality, and of course it has quality in it. But it hasn't got a great deal of depth to it. With regards to a top three, would you like to throw your hat in the ring and commit to one?
Yeah, I think OJ is going to win for the first time in Mexico and get that one out of the way that he hasn't won. I think he'll win, and I think the next two's tough. I was watching the shakedown times before, actually, and I don't want to read too much into those, but you kind of think about it, don't you, when you're making your judgments? But yeah, I'll go OJ, Latvala, Padden. That's my top three.
Ryan Champion.
Well, actually, I was going to go for the same three, but in a slightly different order, because I think Latvala is going to continue his form. Again, he's still got the better road position. I think if he starts going well, as he did in Mexico, then he could be tough for Ogier to catch. So I'm going to go Latvala, Ogier, and then I'm going to go Hayden Padden in third as well.
Okay, I'm going to go out there, right? I'm going to say Mads Osberg, Hayden Padden, and Sebastian Ogier. That's my three.
Shell shocked.
They're on the table, as they used to say.
The shell shock sound of the silence of Ryan Champion and Jack Benyon there.
Exactly. Go on, go to the bookies. You'll get some good odds on that.
Do you know what? That's no. I did that in the three order. Yeah. So Ogier's still winning.
Oh, now you tell us.
Yeah. I've done it in that order. No.
You've got
built to it.
Tony.
Listen,
it's all about the
Jack,
guys.
I reckon he's backpedalling there.
With all due respect, with all due respect to my lyric colleagues in this particular instance, I know how to build a story and then give you the punchline. It's what I've done. Done it for 12 years. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but you had everybody confused because everybody just assumed you were saying Mats Osberg was going to win.
Everybody, just you and Jack at the moment. Nobody's listening yet. We're still recording it. Right. Now, I tell you what, one story which really did catch my eye, because we do need to push on as ever, was coming back to the British Rally Championship. A former WRC driver for M Sport is Matthew Wilson, Jack. Just tell us a little bit about how that one broke, and is it just a one-off on the Pirelli?
Yeah, at the minute it's just a one-off on the Pirelli, and I know for a fact Matthew's been considering coming back to the British Championship since it was talked about sort of being rejuvenated, really. It's something that he's really wanted to do. The option is a fairly local event. I went up to one of the BRC Open days, which was obviously before the season started, and Matthew was given a few rides around in an R2T there, and you can see the smile on his face that he definitely had the bug back after his sports car antics. But yeah, it's really nice to see him back. The interesting thing there is going to be whether they can get the car back, because he's actually driving Elvin Evans's Argentina R5. So they're going to have to freight that car back on Monday and get that rebuilt and ready for the rally, which the checkdown starts on Friday, I believe. So that's going to be an interesting turnaround if they can do that.
Are they using a good shipping company, Tony?
Yes, they are. The flights are happening on Sunday night. Okay. There you go. Just saying. No, actually, the flights will be Monday. Yes, the cars will be back. I don't think the pressures are on us. I think the pressure's on Elvin Evans, to be perfectly honest with you, because in fact, I don't want to ruin this, right? Because we cover all this with Rich as well later on, that Malcolm's not at the event because he's got his ankle in a pot at the moment, because he's had some ankle surgery. Matthew's car obviously is out on the event. I don't think Matthew's over there either. So the Wilsons are not there. Basically, the boys are running obviously the team that are there, and they've got obviously fantastic infrastructure at MS Sport anyway these days. But the boys are there. But the big pressure is that you've got to get Matthew's car back as well in one piece. So,
I can just add to that as well, Tony. I was alluded to watching the Shakedown stage times before, and Elvin had a problem on the Shakedown stage. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the car's okay. And obviously, we're recording this now as everything's happening in Argentina. So we'll have to wait and see what the actual issue was. But the car was stopped for some time on the Shakedown stage. So keep an eye out for that.
Will do, will do. Right, guys, I wanted to mention this. I'm mentioning this because I have such a massive issue about whether we make reference to Rallycross, whether we do Rallycross. Obviously, I've been involved with Rallycross and things like that, and I'm so conflicted on it. But I've got to mention it because it was the big first event, Loeb versus Solberg, opening round at WRX. Was anybody surprised by the result?
I wasn't actually. I thought the result was the only thing I was surprised about was Mr. Ekstrom going out in the semi-finals. But that was through contact with Timmy Hansen at the first corner, I think it was. So I think we were robbed of a fight between Solberg and Ekstrom, to be honest, in the final. But I think Loeb did a decent job. He struggled on his joker lap at the start, where he had some minor contact in the tear and joker, which pushed him off and just dropped him back a few places, and he struggled to get up from there, didn't he? But it was an interesting match anyway.
Ryan, aren't you glad that Jack watched it?
I read the report for autosport.com, so you both say.
Oh, there you go. No, unfortunately, I was out on Sunday, so I didn't see it, and I wanted to watch the excellent coverage because I do love Mr. Coley and Mr. Wilkes, who we do need to get back on as well at some point, because he's always good value when we get him on. So we do need to get Guy on perhaps and have a catch up with him anyway. Yeah. But speaking of former I suppose British rally stars and people who compete in the World Rally Championship, coming up very, very shortly, we're going to be talking to Justin Dale, Yeah, I know. People tend to forget. You know, obviously, there's just that assumption. You imagine him in Peugeot pocket rockets and things like that. But he did so much more, and we're going to talk to him about that a bit later on in the program. Anyway, but guys, we're going to crack on. We're going to let Jack do his any other business now, because we put it on his toes last week. He floundered somewhat because he felt it had just been sprung upon him. So he's had 7 days to prepare his any other business for this week.
I've had seven days of busy journalistic work, mate. I haven't had 7 days to prepare my any other business.
Listen, we watch it on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and we know you do hair comparisons with TV people and everything else. So I'm sorry, Jack, no, you've got to have your any other business.
No, thank you very much.
Go on.
No, I think I'm going to choose I'm going to go left field and choose the WRC any other business this week. It's not my not my field of coverage usually. Obviously, we've got David Evans doing that, but I just I think you touched on it briefly about Volkswagen on this huge run of rally wins, and that success this week would mean 13 wins on the bounce, which has never been done in the WRC before. So my question to you guys is, what is the PW Polo, the most successful rally car of all time? Is it the best rally car of all time?
Oh, you put a question to us, not on any other bit. Well, I suppose it is, isn't it?
It is, kind of. Ryan Champion. With a question at the end.
Yeah. Ryan Champion, you're a connoisseur again. Don't let me down like you did with the Maxi Rally thing before.
Well, it's getting that way, isn't it? I mean, Citroën were obviously incredibly dominant over the years, but it evolved from the Zara to the C4 to the DS3. But the Polo, if Volkswagen continue to run the Polo all the way through their involvement, I guess because for the very fact it's not going to change, then the Polo will become the most dominant car. But yeah, it's been an incredible steamroller, and we desperately need Hyundai to come back to the 4M sport to get the car back to the front, and Toyota to come in with a competitive car, because we need interesting rallies, we need other manufacturers fighting at the front.
Jack, we always playfully kind of talk about the fact that you're half our age, but you are incredibly insightful, and we're just really, really envious of the fact that you are half our age. When you were first getting involved and you first started watching rally, that would have been during, I guess, and what I mean is not looking back historically, I mean when you were growing up, in all seriousness, when you were growing up, I suppose it would have been the Ford Citroën trade-off where there was nobody else.
Well, kind of. I mean, I was watching it when I was two, but I guess you can't really say that I was watching it insightfully then. But I watched really the late 90s and Mitsubishi domination with Makinen, and then into the Ford versus Citroen trade-off, yeah. But, I mean, I don't remember any manufacturer coming in as sort of aggressively as Volkswagen are, basically from nowhere, and just going on such a run that they've gone on. And, you know, look at all the rallies they've won and the domination they've had over the season. But, I know we know how good Hergé is, but I think it's a lot to do with the car as well, to be honest.
I just think, you know, I know from when Volkswagen first came in, and you shouldn't, obviously they've thrown the resources at it, and you know, whether how do we judge it? You know, I know what they spent, for instance, on the aircraft pallets to air freight their cars, and it was somewhere in the region of 10 times the cost of what everybody else's equipment was, and that was just on, you know, the aircraft pallets to fly the cars. So, you know, when we're talking about budgets, that's kind of where they're spending money. You know, the big thing was made about Hyundai and their European setup, and that did take a huge amount of resource, I think, out of the team, that you know, that amazing building that they now have, which I think is basically revolutionized how we see service areas now.
Yeah.
But, you know, Volkswagen kind of did it in a very different way, and they put so much money in to the detail, the eye to detail, and the finance that's been spent on that detail, you know, I think is speaks volumes. And then they went out and got the best driver, and they got the best number two driver, as much as you'd hate to be called that. Then they got the best number three driver, and, you know, all in all, the package that they've put together enables them to be the best. Would they have been the best when Citroen were at their plump? I think it would have been very close. But, you know, it's not an apples for apples comparison, is it?
No, it's not. No. Interesting debate, though. So,
I'll tell you what, Jack. First any other business, my friend.
Yeah, you can come back again.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah, you can come back again.
But just to put your mind at rest, Jack, Elvin's problem was just a sensor. Thanks to the power of Twitter, I've just checked it out. It was just a sensor, and we got the car going again.
Guys, I've just realised, before we go, right, because we genuinely need to crack on, because we have got Justin Dale waiting, but I want Jack to be part of this as well. I want Jack to be part of it. Should we do the draw for the Dirt Games?
Yeah, let's do it.
Should we do it now? Okay. For those of you who have not seen the picture on Twitter, which I've just tweeted, which obviously, it'd be pointless me telling you that now, but hey, that's what's happened. I wanted to show that it was very genuine. Everybody that got it right, I wrote it down on a tiny piece of paper, and I put it into a mug, and I took a photograph of the mug, yes, just so it looked like, you know, we've got some kind of prize draw thing going on, and we have got a prize draw thing going on. What I wanted to do was to kind of mention some of the people that I was surprised who got it wrong, but I suppose the other thing I had to do, and I know Ryan had already spoke to Paul Coleman about the correct answer, and Ryan got it right straight away, but I need to just mention a couple of people who did tweet in or drop us messages. Brian Benjamin, unfortunately, was incorrect. Adam Chatfield, Matthew Gillian, Jimmy Brogdon, Andy Glossop, who else have we got? David Kelly, PCB Photography, Matt Yelkick, David Jones. You all were nearly right. But I'm gonna do, in fact, one of you actually was right. I've just realised I've read out one of the correct ones there as well. So, boys, I'm gonna put my hand in the cup and keep moving it round until I get to a near piece of paper. I want Jack, you say stop.
Stop.
Congratulations, Chris Campbell. You have won one of the signed copies of Dirt, but signed by all the team behind it, not by one of the test drivers, who, of course, was Ryan Champion. He wasn't available, and his people weren't prepared to let him sign it. I don't know what it was. I think he had issues with image rights or something like that with Codemasters, but hey. So, Chris, we'll drop you a message. Now, the floor in this competition, of course, is we do have one for an Xbox and one for a PS4. We're hoping that our two winners both want either or, because if you both want the same one, we've got a problem. But hey, we'll work around it. Right, Ryan, you tell me when to, you tell me when you want me to stop.
Stop.
Okay. And our next winner, or rather our other winner, is Matthew Gillian. Congratulations, Matthew. We will drop you a message. And again, hopefully between the two here, one's got a PS4 and the other one's got an Xbox, because if you haven't,
we can sort that out with the nice people from Codemasters.com.
I'm sure we'll be able to figure something out. I'm sure we will. Anyway, listen, it's at this point, Jack, where thank you. We'll let you get back to work. And we will have a catch-up probably over the next couple of days anyway. But thank you so much for joining us. And we'll same time, same place next week, I guess.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. And I'll see you all next week. Thanks so much.
Cheers. Thanks, Jack. Cheers. See you
bye.
Soon.
Bye.
And that was Jack Benyon, of course, from Motorsport News. Right, we're going to have a cheeky break, and we're going to then cross over to our chat with Rich Milner that I did 24 hours ago with him in the service park. And then straight from that, we're going to go straight over to talk to a little bit of a British rally legend in his own right, and as I say, a man about town, so to speak, in the world of rallying for many, many years. But someone I've always wanted to get on and have a chat with, and fortunately, through the powers of Ryan Champion, managed to do it. We're going to have Justin Dale, former Peugeot Works driver, and competed over in the Middle East, competed in the World Rally Championship, for Mitsubishi and WRC, and did some shakedown work, yada 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 yada. As I say, I'm not going to ruin it. Let's sit back, relax, enjoy what Rich has got to say, and then sit back and we're going to have a nice relaxed chat with Justin Dale.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. And a friend of the show, we've not had him on for a little while, Grizzly Rich, who's just had a shave, is joining us all the way from Argentina. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, Rich.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
It's been a while, hasn't it? I was trying to think the last time we spoke, which was in a service park in mid Wales, and now I find myself speaking to you in a service park in Argentina. It's been a bit of downtime, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been a bit of downtime. You know, I don't want to ruin your radio show too much. I think a good break is healthy.
It is, but I'll be honest with you, trying to find content is not always easy. And in fact, even we had the lovely Bex on the other week, obviously does the WRC podcast, and even she was saying, yeah, bit of a struggle this time of year for us. So we've diversified into lots of different things, but anyway, there you go. But I suppose the big gap, I suppose, for the uninitiated, and this was something you and I were going to talk about a while back, which we didn't get time to, is the logistics of obviously this South American kit, obviously leaving the UK, and this is essentially the same kit which with Rally Mexico, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Normally we would have another event in between, but due to various reasons with the calendar and events not being able to run at certain dates, we've gone from Mexico straight to Argentina. So usually we would bring a lot more kit back from Mexico, transmissions and things, for example, which we would use in Portugal, but this time we've actually left them in the containers. So the containers have gone from Mexico to Argentina with extra kit in. We'll use it here and then take it back again for Portugal. And then this kit will now go on to the new event in China later in the year. It's a bit more difficult this year because we've got China, then Australia, and China's on tarmac. So there's extra bits again to take out to cover that rally. So it's a bit different this year. It's a bit similar kind of principles, but some new details, which is always new challenges for the guys doing the logistics.
I guess the people, you know, the lovely people who listen to our program, yes, you rally fans, and I guess there's always an assumption that things just arrive, and just that from a logistical point of view, obviously I've got a slightly vested interest in all this, but from a logistical point of view, you know, the cars come back, for instance, and the cars can be worked on, and then they can be flown back out. So the cars fly in and out for the events, don't they?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, for us, they do. For other teams, some smaller teams, actually, if they have two cars or example, this year's worked quite well. They could sea freight the car between Mexico and Argentina. But for us, with our pool of cars we have, we need them back to rebuild them to the standard we want them for the next rally. So we don't have an option otherwise. But yeah, I think a lot of people just turn up and the service park's there every year. The cars are there every year. Even some of the team members who aren't involved within the logistics department don't realise what goes on. And it's very difficult. You know, we're trying to send cars out at the last possible minute and get them there as quickly as possible in the most economical way and the most financially sound way as well, because obviously shipping all this kit around the world is not cheap before you even begin them. So there's a lot of factors to take in when we're trying to get everything there on time.
Just looking now, it's Argentina has always been one of those events with a compact entry is probably the polite way of putting it, I guess. There's if you take out the kind of the national runners, we're in the realms of, you know, 24 cars. Strong contingent of Fords. We've got Elvin there, who's now come back into the fold, back into the R5 Fiesta, taking on this glut of Skoda R5s that are out there as well.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously have some good competition from the other R5 manufacturers. Skoda's very strong at the moment as well. And, you know, we did a lot of work and improvement with the R5 when we made the Evo version of the engine. And we wanted to prove that the car was still competitive, because we knew it was, but it wasn't getting some of the results we wanted to get. It was getting very good results around the globe, really, with customers, but in WRC2 we weren't getting the wins with against the Skoda Works team effectively. So it was a good decision, I mean, an easy decision really for us to use Elvin to showcase what the car's capable of. I think we're all kind of a little bit skeptical of where the WRC2 championship's going. For me, it was created as a customer championship. And to take works drivers into it spoils some of the charm for the guys that are coming to compete and try to move up to the next level. But, you know, it's a victim of its own success with how good it's been and how many entries it's had each year and how many more entries it's getting each year. So, you know, we're using Elvin to showcase the car.
I think
that's
some
good result leading the championship, and hopefully we can get another good result here.
I think what's amazing is, I think Circuit of Ireland weekend, I think Ryan Champion, my aunt to my deck, or whatever way around you want to put it, quoted a figure. There was 50 R5 Fiestas competing that weekend in various championships around the world. That's staggering.
Yeah. I mean, we are, you know, we're learning a lot as well internally. You know, we've effectively sold over 150 cars now, and each week we're adding a new car somewhere. And the older cars aren't stopping being run. So our customer base is going up and up, and the parts requirements are going up and up and up. And as the season gets further into the year and gets busier and busier, there's cars running every single weekend somewhere. And, you know, the demand and requirements of those cars are never-ending. So it's very good, and it's a very good formula the FIA has come up with, and R5 has proved to be really, really successful, which is great. But there is a lot going on that, you know, if you're a follower of the British Championship or the Irish Championship only, you don't realise what's going on. Italian Championship, South American Championship, Polish Championship, all these things are going on at the same time. So it makes life even harder for us. But, you know, that's a good thing for us, to be honest.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Wilson's very happy. But Mr. Wilson Jr., speaking of the British Rally Championship, has been announced today that he's coming out on the Pirelli in one of these R5 cars as well.
He is. He's actually using the car that Elvin's using out here. So fingers crossed.
No pressure.
Well.
No pressure. Yeah. Don't crash the boss's son's car.
That's the most important car that Elvin's got to get back in his career.
Yeah, no so, pressure at all.
Yeah, but yeah, it would be great for Matt to go back out. You know, he's got Stu alongside him, which would be great. He's a good guy, good co-driver. And I think Matt's desperate to go back and enjoy and be part of the British Championship. And now it's become so successful.
It's been absolutely mega. Obviously, you were out on Mid Wales, which is where we bumped into one another, and obviously we've had Circuit of Ireland since then. As I say, the amount of Fiestas alone on Circuit of Ireland, and that's what Ryan and I were talking about last week, and then we came to this magical figure that I think we could kind of put a figure of 50 around the world, which was just takes your breath away when you think, you know, that those 50 cars are coming out of M Sport, you know, and it's M Sport is a very different animal to what it was when it was, you know, obviously there's still the Ford involvement, but when it was the Ford factory team, it was a very different beast to what it is today. It's you know, you're probably only three steps away from being actual a car manufacturer, I guess.
Yeah, I guess in some ways we already are. You know, we're producing one car a week, which is more than some of these supercar factories around the world. Okay, we're a different market, but you know, we're still producing more output per year than some other car manufacturers as such, and we are learning every step of the way. You know, when I started nearly 10 years ago now, it was a very different animal. Like you say, there was a handful of Focus WRC customers and the Fiesta ST guys, and since then we've grown and gone forward, and you know, that's now one of the biggest parts of the company. The WRC team, the WRC side of the business is still the core business. It's still what Malcolm really has his interests and where his heart lies. But all this that goes on around it is helping the company expand and move forward as well. And everyone knows nowadays you can't stand still. You have to keep developing, keep expanding, keep moving. If you stand still, you tend to fall away. So we don't want that either. But it's learning steps for us as well.
Absolutely. Now, the guys you've got out on, we've mentioned Elvin, obviously, in the R5 car, but there's some WRC cars out on Argentina as well. Welcome return. It always makes me smile whenever I see his name on an entry list. Henning Solberg joins the fold again on Argentina. And, it's always great to see Henning back, isn't it?
Henning is one of the best characters there is. He's one of the worst and one of the best. He turned up the other week at M Sport, unannounced, just appeared. Brought a black cab from Manchester Airport to Cumbria, which you can imagine is not the shortest of routes. But that's just how he is. That's how he rolls.
Yeah.
He then proceeded to drag me into the toilet, which was a bit of a strange one, to show me what he'd been using to clean his teeth with, because he didn't know. He'd forgotten everything, which is typical Henning. He didn't know what he was cleaning his teeth with. He bought some toothpaste, but he said, "It's not right, this toothpaste. There's something wrong with it." So he dragged me to the toilet, fishes it out of the bin, shows it to me. He'd actually bought Fixodent, which, for people that don't know, is false teeth glue. So he cleaned his teeth with a bit of false teeth glue, and then was laughing his head off in the toilet with me. God knows what people thought as they were walking past outside. You don't get many like him, that's for sure.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. What a great story. What a great story. Aside from, obviously, Mads and Eric as well, Lorenzo is back as well. It's all well with Lorenzo now?
Yeah, I think it's a tough step up for anyone from WRC to WRC and WRC2 to WRC, and last year was a bit of a learning curve, and this year is a progression on that. But you know, to drive at the pace he's driving is an achievement anyway, and then to increase to the top level with the top guys is another step on, which is a good 2 to 3 year process, to be honest. So you can't expect too much from him. He's a typical driver. He wants to be as successful and as quick as possible from the start, but it does take time. It takes experience, especially on tough events like this. So, you know, anyone who finishes here without any dramas has done a very good rally.
Those looking at the entry list as well, and there's one that's a glaring one for the DMAC team, which is Oi Tanak. Fond memories of Oi last year in South America, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. We don't want that again.
No.
We don't want any kind of drama like that. And again, Oi will be looking just for a finish. He's obviously with the DMAC team this year. DMAC are investing heavily in the championship and various different support championships as well, which is great. And they're on a learning curve as well with the tyres and development of the tyres. And they're looking for small steps of improvement every rally. And I think they're definitely going in the right direction.
Yeah.
You can see from Circuit of Ireland times, you can see from various times throughout WRC this year that they're moving on. And that's what their aim and intention is this year. So, again, it's a long old season, and I think Oit's the right kind of guy to help them get through that and develop the tyres and develop the brand for them as well. So, you know, everyone in the M Sport team has got slightly different priorities. Eric, for example, this rally just needs to finish. That's the biggest thing for him, this rally. It's the last one he doesn't really have the experience on. If he can get through after a tough start to the season, but some good pace, but a tough start, he can get this one under the belt, then it's a great step on and then he goes back from Portugal to events he knows better. So hopefully there's a little bit more pressure taken off him for those extra things he doesn't know about on these events.
I think the difference is what people do tend to forget as well is just having a set of notes from the previous year that they can, okay, some of the stages do change, of course, and sometimes you have to write new sets of notes and stuff on rallies, but just having that set of notes that, you know, you've used two or three times, you know, whether it be on the recce and then on the rally, and then you go back the following year on the recce and then on the rally, you know, that amount of information which is built up on, you know, because we're only on two past recces, and on DVDs, you know, I know the guys obviously record all the recces and stuff like that, but there's nothing like feeling it in your backside, really, is there?
No, and I mean, it always amazes me for guys that come to new rallies, they've got to do 350k in stages, tough stages. The boys were out yesterday on recce from 7 in the morning till 6:30 at night, pretty much non-stop, huge road sections, and only get two passes to make the notes and correct the notes, and then drive at 110%. Okay, like you say, they got a video, but it's not the same as sitting in the car going through the stages. You know, it's a mega achievement, and that's another massive part of the rally that people sometimes don't appreciate, how little time you actually get on the stage before you drive 110%. So it's all a learning curve, and it's a very steep learning curve to jump from anything up to WRC.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in the downtime, Rich, you were a little feature on our programme.
Yes,
you was. Not just the grizzly element. Obviously, we always talk about the grizzly Rick Milner, but obviously you had a little play out in an M Sport car as well. You were out on the Malcolm Wilson rally.
I did, and I didn't crash, which was pretty much the aim.
Yeah,
everything else is a bonus. So yeah, we had a good little day. Me and the logistics guy, the guy that works in logistics, Michael Gilby, a few people know him.
Yeah,
we had a good day out. It was a bit of a last minute deal. Went through the office, and Michael was desperate to do the rally, so I said, right, you find me a car, decent price, and we'll go and see what we can do. And within a few hours, I had three options, so we decided to go for it. And it was great fun, really good fun. But it did make me realise, I think I'll just stick to what I do now. I'm not quite a driver yet.
No,
there is tracking in car on the YouTube, you know, if anyone wants to fall asleep and is struggling to sleep, about that on for 8 minutes.
Absolutely. As I say, mate, as I say, I am not a rally driver. I drive rally cars, and I think there's a massive difference. I think there's a massive difference. Yeah. I really, really do. I really, really do. So what's the rest of the day for you now, then, Rich? Obviously, we're on Wednesday as we record this. This will be podcast to be going out towards the end of the week. What's happening in Rich Milner's world now in the service park on a Wednesday?
So we'll just got up early, went for the run, and then we'll head down to the service park, and then we've got scrutineering today. We've got shakedown tomorrow, so the guys are just getting ready for that. It's the last day of recce for the drivers, so some of the team are going out to the recce lunch. I've got various tedious jobs of emails and things to catch up on, and then there's always something that crops up during the day we're not expecting, and then this evening we'll have a meeting with all the drivers and some of the team members to run through the rally, run through the strategy and anything we want to talk about, discuss after the recce. And then we'll have to update the boss because Malcolm isn't actually coming to this event. So he's had an ankle replacement, so he's at home recovering. So he's left a few of us out here to cover the job for the week.
Wow. So let's get this straight. The boss isn't there. The other boss's car is actually out there with Elvin driving it. No pressure on any ear, really, is there? No pressure on any ear.
I've got a one-way ticket, just in case.
Listen, mate, as ever, it's always great to have you on. I really do appreciate your time and being our man in the service park, as it were, and we'll get you back on again soon. But lovely to catch you up, Rich, and best of luck to all the boys on Rally Argentina.
And you, thank you, and speak to you soon.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. Hope you listened to the story with Rich and Henning and enjoyed it. And yeah, it's a cracker. Toothpaste day. Who'd have thought it? Anyway, without further ado, we've spoken about at the top of the show and somebody I've wanted to get on for ages and ages and ages. And yeah, so welcome. I normally say welcome back at this point, but it's the first time you've been on, Justin, and I really, really apologise for that. I blame Ryan Champion. Welcome to Absolute Rally, Justin Dale.
Thank you.
Are you all right?
Yeah, great, thanks. Yeah, great.
We wanted to get you on for ages, but Ryan didn't want to. I don't know why. I don't know that it was over the bit. I don't know about the bitterness and the whole angry thing over the Peugeot one make championship things back in those. I don't know. I'm just guessing. Or I'm trying to stir the pot up. Of course, you guys competed one another back in the day, and obviously you work together now. But Rai, I know you've been waiting for this moment. You've got some questions ready for Justin, haven't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of realised that it's 23 years since we first started competing against each other, which is a little bit scary. But as you just said, Tony, we've certainly seen each other quite a lot since. But yeah, I mean, Justin, you obviously came up through the Peugeot One Mate Championship in 205s and then 306s, winning the 96 British Junior Championship, and then you became a Peugeot driver through that era of the British Championship that we now look on with great fondness, the Formula 2 days. Now, BRC's come back this year. It's obviously back to really exciting times. But just take us through some of those times with 106 Maxis and then moving on to the 206 in that Formula 2 era.
Yeah, quite. Like you say, it was a good time, and it's good to see it coming back now. But back then it was, like I say, the One Mate Championships were the way to go. And that was what everyone was trying to get into. But going through from 205s when we competed against each other, then 306s, and then winning it in, I think it was 96, wasn't it? Lost all track of time now. 96, and going on into the factory car for the year after, even though winning it that year wasn't the prize, wasn't the factory drive, the actual prize was Rally GP or Network Q as it was then, but just managed to secure a deal for the Group A car for the next year, which was great, really.
And then you moved on from the Group A 306 into the 106 Maxi, and that was a really exciting car at the time, wasn't it? I mean, it looked fantastic, it sounded fantastic, and imagine a great fun car to drive.
Yeah, well, fantastic cars. I think it still is now. It's great to see it back out again at the minute. But when we went into that car, it was actually she's actually now Francois Delacour's wife now, Priscille. She was it was her car from France that Peugeot UK brought over. First event was Silverstone Rally Sprint, I think. Actually, we did a rally sprint in it. Well, fantastic car. But obviously, at that point, it was predominantly sort of developed for tarmac, so it was a bit of a handful. I can remember doing Kilda in it, which obviously with the Pirelli Rally coming up shortly as well. And it had sort of technical term of 45 millimetres of bump steer, so along them straights in sixth gear, she was a bit of a handful. Hence ending up upside down in a ditch.
But you got the car better after that and you know, achieved some great results with it then.
Yeah, it was great. It was a fantastic little thing to drive. It was, like you said, everyone knows a Peugeot is a bit lively on the back end. There was no difference with them, really, but you sort of had to get hold of by the scruff of the neck and get on with it, really. Obviously, Peugeot being Peugeot, like to use their own stuff as well, like dampers and things. We couldn't really play around with too much, but just part of it being in a works team, sometimes you are restricted on what you can use. You've not really got as much of a free hand as what people think. So you're sort of stuck with some things that you've got, as you'll know, with the Pumas and things like that, right?
Now, at the time, obviously, the F2 rules were Formula 2, so there were 2-litre cars, so we had Martin Rowe, Mark Higgins, Gwyndaff, etc. in the 2-litre cars. You were sort of biting at their heels, really, in the 1600 cars. What was your sort of favourite memories from that kind of time?
Like you say, with Gwyndaff and Martin loads of excellent drivers out, Higgins and things like that, they were out there. There was, obviously, you had the 2-litre cars, sort of it was good. You sort of, obviously when the Maxi came over, the little 1600, sort of nicknamed the Pocket Rocket, and you weren't expected to beat the 2 litres. I can always remember getting the first ever fastest over all time in a 1600. That was a nice little thing to have, and that was on the Jim Clark Rally.
Great little story. What stage was that on Jim Clark?
Around the little one, round the town. Tapio in the McGann. We were just a fraction in front of him round there. So it was a nice little thing to do. You know what I mean? Round there, you could really just go for it. And that was one of them stages that suited the little car, really.
Great thing to have. So you moved on from the 106 to the 206. Obviously, the 206 was the more modern car at the time. Was there a fundamental change between the two, or was it quite a similar car?
Power-wise, not much different. Obviously, it was just in the era when they were changing sort of the inlet manifold from the four sort of inlets to the single inlet on the engine. So the engine itself was predominantly the same. But obviously, then we went to 206 with a sequential gearbox as well. So hence the little 106 had a dog box in it. So it's still a sort of normal change in that car. But going to the bigger brakes and the sequential gearbox, it was going to be a big jump up. And so there was a little bit of a transition as well, where the 106 to start with was still quicker. So we did use the 106 in the last year of when it was the Formula Rally season, which obviously a lot of people remember back then. We actually got excluded at the end of that year. That was one of them stories, that a paperwork issue.
Now, towards the end of the Peugeot days, you started to get involved with the factory Mitsubishi team, the rugby based team as it was at the time. Started to do a lot of test work for them, and then that led to an outing as a factory driver in a Mitsubishi on the World Championship. How did that all come about?
It was just one of them things, really. The shakedowns from the Step 2 car, sort of just after Tommy's sort of days. When it first went between the Step 2 car, was in between the Group A car and the World car. So did a lot of work with the Step 2 car, and then obviously went into the World car after that. Like you say, it was one of them things. It was always been allowed in my contract with Peugeot to do the shakedowns and things with Mitsubishi, because it wasn't a conflict of interest with what we were doing in the UK. And then all of a sudden, it just came about. I think Alistair had an accident on his mountain bike, I think it was, after Corsica. One of the tarmac events, I can't remember now. And there was a spare seat, effectively. I didn't know anything of it. I'd actually already done a deal to do the network queue in a Subaru, a private car, that we managed to get a sponsorship deal together with some sort of colleagues there. And then all of a sudden, this seat come about right out of the blue, really, and I'd never even driven the car on gravel before. It'd only ever been miles and miles and miles around Myra and a few press days and things like that. So it was right out of the blue. We'd already set a deal in place with the Subaru, and then all of a sudden this come along. So it was a big decision. To car was built, everything ready from Pro Drive, to then not use that one, to go over to the works car, and that's what we did. Yeah, chose that route.
So you did Rally GB with the factory Mitsubishi team. Maybe didn't work out as you wanted. You went off on the rally, but you were going pretty well until then.
Yeah, like I say, I did a test in Wales sort of 2 or 3 days before the event, first time on the gravel. And it went well. It was one of them things. I think coming from the Formula 2 car straight into the World car was obviously not even a customer car. It was a proper spec car. One of the big differences I really first noticed then was the difference in tyres. To have two Pirelli tyres look exactly the same and one of them be half a second a kilometre quicker than the other, that was a big thing to notice. The difference, what it was back then, whether you were a private car or a factory car, so half a second a kilometre just on the compounds was a massive jump. It's things like that now, hopefully, that's not there, and it's making it a lot more even as well.
Now, after that, you were able to put a deal together with the Hyundai team. Obviously, Hyundai had a full works team then, the first time around with the Accent WRC, and you put a deal together to drive what was, I guess, pretty much a work spec Hyundai at the time.
Yeah, that was on a couple of events we run as a third car. It's like you say, putting a deal together, that sort of thing, then it's so difficult to keep the ball moving. The money that's involved in that sort of thing is even back in 2002 was a lot of money. It was great. It was a great experience to, probably, like you say, to come. So you worked with Persia as a works team in the UK, but to make that jump into the World Championship was difficult. It's difficult for anybody, and to keep it going is even harder. But yeah, the experience you do and the things you see along the way with sort of running three cars in a team, and you're not going to get the latest bits that the sort of number one and number two drivers are getting, but fantastic opportunities.
Now, I remember something, Justin. I was working at Manchester Airport at the time, and I seem to remember a lot of cars...
As a baggage
relocation. You can take the boy out of Liverpool, probably best not to, right? But baggage relocation, I prefer to call it. Now, I was working on the freight terminal, and I seen regular cars with your name on going out to the Middle East at that time.
Yeah, same sort of time. That was part of the deal with the Hyundais, in all fairness. I managed to get a sponsor from the Middle East, and we had a couple of Group N cars out there that we were running in the Middle East Championship, plus then some of the financing from that was supporting the Hyundai drive effectively.
So, as I say, I think I seem to remember, and I could be complete, was it the House of Cars?
That was one of the sponsors. We had a few sponsors. There was a couple of UK companies as well. House of Cars was they sold Prestige Cars in Dubai. Still going now. They're still out there going. There was a couple of other smaller companies, and we had PlayStation from the UK on the side of the Hyundai as well, which was a nice one to get. And that PlayStation came right out of the blue. And Ryan, I know this. It's one of them things you do these little press days. And you're just talking to people, and you never know. It's one of them things. You've got to talk to as many people as you can. Any of these shows you're doing, that was literally an event I did for Mitsubishi at Millbrook. PlayStation were a guest within a month. I had a personal sponsor of PlayStation.
Wow. Now, I remember. I can't remember. Obviously, the Hyundai deal was for three rounds, and then. I don't know whether you were doing driver coach, and I seem to remember you in a Super 1600 Fiesta, and then I think in an Asquith Clio on the British Rally Championship and things like that. And where does it get to? And, you know, Ryan and I have spoke about this before as well. Where does it get to where, I suppose, you stop chasing those big sponsors? Where does the line in the sand get drawn?
Yeah, you're right. It does. It gets to a point you just think, right, like I was saying before, like the keeping the ball moving with the world events and things like that. You're talking back then of probably having to find £200,000 an event.
Wow.
You know, it's a lot of money. I think 2002, you're getting it's not going to find all of that. Obviously, you're getting some supported by the manufacturer, but you're having to find a lot of money for each event, and to keep that going does take a bit. But you got the other opportunities in the Middle East, and we come back and, like you say, did a bit with a M Sport Fiesta with Paul Risbridger, who used to be at Hyundai customer team. He managed to put a deal together with Malcolm Wilson to sort of loan a car effectively, so we didn't have to pay for a car. We just had to give him back a car in the same condition that it left M Sport. So that helped. All these little things help. And we might have to find the budget then to run that vehicle, and then we did. What did we do first? I think we did rally. We did Ulster Rally in it.
I seem to remember Ulster, yeah.
Yeah, then we went over to Latuque, then Catalunya. It was mainly just going to do tarmac. But that was even back then. That was a great little car. That Fiesta, the Super 1600 Fiesta, handled better. It did handle better than the Peugeot did.
I seem to remember the big problem with that Fiesta, and by all means put me straight on this, but I think that Fiesta Super 1600 project was started by Borum, and then kind of almost M Sport inherited the project.
You're right.
I think
there was a lot of things that crossed over from the Puma on that car. I think it was in that, like you say, the transition. The guys at Borum sort of knew they were losing out to Malcolm, and it was all going to go up to M Sport, that they sort of stopped developing it in the end. So when Malcolm got it, couldn't start again because you had a lot of it was already homologated, and you could only use a joker on so many, I think it's five extra things a year you could change on the vehicle at that point. So it took time for it to develop again. But it was good fun car to drive.
So out of everything that you've done, and again, I remember the Peugeot thing for me, you will forever be stuck with Peugeot, you know, no matter what you do. I think just because of that silver livery Peugeot was just one that will always stick with me, even when the bright yellow 206 came about for one event that year. I was going to ask you about that, and you very candidly spoke about that, because I was actually on Banbury that I did the Polo Challenge that year, and I did the last round of it. So I did Banbury in a bright pink Polo, by the way. And I wasn't making a life-changing thing. It wasn't anything to do with what I was into. It was just a sponsor, and I ended up having to drive a bright pink car. But I remember the 206, and I remember the big kerfuffle around the fact that that car had to be debuted on the event, and I think it was Mick Linford played a blinder by putting Barbara in it and letting
Barbara come out,
and you stayed in the 106. And I was going to ask you, in your eyes, who won that championship?
Well, obviously we went, like you do, you went to tribunals and all sorts after that to try and clear, I'm driving a factory car, and it's not my fault that the, effectively that car was used, the 106 was homologated the year before, as it was the year before that, and there was a grey area over the paperwork for that year, but it was on a technicality, the paperwork wasn't put in time for the 106 that year. And the year after, it was still homologated, so it just happened to be on a technicality, on a date, that the car wasn't actually homologated that year that I drove it. That's what it come down to at the end of the day. But it was agreed at the start of the year that we were going to use the 206, which is why it had to come out that year.
Now, I've got a theory, and I guess having you two guys here, in all seriousness, it's good to have you two guys here, because you both did the year of Formula Rally. And a lot of people knocked it, and there was a lot of things that weren't quite right about it, and which I don't really want to get into, because it takes us into dark and grey areas, to say the least. But, you know, foot and mouth, yes, it did kind of lay claim to a lot of events, so a lot of events had to be created, and we've joked flippantly the other week with Martin Rowe about the Rally of a Thousand Cones on the Wirral and all those things. But the support around that championship, and you think about the investment that went into that championship, I think we're only seeing something, well, it's probably even more so now, but we've not really had anything like that since, have we?
No, it was good. Like you say, it was Andy Moss put that together, didn't he, that year, and to make something out of a year that really wasn't going to do anything effectively, and the competition, I know, like you said, Martin would have said about the Wirral when he won it up there that year, but how close the events were was unbelievable.
Yeah. I just remember, you know, there was, you know, teams of one make championships, all the KAs were there, the Polos were there, and the Pumas were there, and then you had the Peugeots were there, which obviously Ryan was there in the Peugeots, and you just think about the money, you know, Ford sent a proper factory team there as well, obviously with support from Rapid Fit, but it was still a board and run project. Obviously Peugeot were there, Volkswagen sent the Super 1600 Polo there, firstly with Neil Simpson and then David Higgins. You know, there was some money being spent, wasn't there?
Yeah, but actually, just thinking about it there, you wonder if a concept like that still has legs, because it was, all right, the rallies weren't classic by any means, but they were good competitive rallies that ultimately made a good TV programme and were exciting to watch and good to promote, which ultimately that's what a manufacturer wants, don't they? And it's interesting, isn't it? Could something like that be put together where you've got maybe shorter, tighter events that are more easy for media to cover, they're more easy to promote, they're closer to the people, you know, to do something like that, it'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Isn't that Circuit Racing Championship, the MN Circuit Racing Championship, I suppose, is ticking that box, isn't it?
In some ways. It's like trying to find
similar, isn't it?
Yeah, like trying to find a halfway house between, it's something that's still a rally and not rallycross, but something that's maybe a little bit easier to cover.
Anyway,
it uses a bit of loose surface as well, like we did that year. It was a good mixture of events.
Yeah, as I remember Kerwin's having ridiculously big curbs, and I seem to remember that was the one, and I don't know what, and you guys probably know him, but I always remember Max McKillen going straight on. He had Nicky Beak sat with him at a junction, and it was a hell of a, it was almost like that 70 to 0 in seconds, and he went straight on and hit that bank.
Yeah, it was a great, I can still remember that event now, because it just poured rain the whole day, didn't it? So
yeah.
First time there, I didn't realise there was so many roads in such a short area.
Yeah, well, it's still it's still run now as a single venue, if memory serves. I think they still run Kerwin now, but anyway. Yeah. Listen, we're going all over the place, but that's the way it kind of happens on this show anyway. But what happens now, Justin? Are you still hanker for a steering wheel, or are you done with it?
Yeah, like you say, you come to a point where you sort of run out of the steam to chase them big drives, and Ryan and those sort of experience, right? It's just, you want to be, if you're going to do it, you want to be in a proper car. That's the sort of thing where you get to, it's hard just to go out there and do it for fun. If you know what I mean, you want to be competitive in something, or you've got to either look at it, you want to be right up the back at the same sort of level, or really having fun doing a real affordable event.
Yeah, why don't you build a Mark II, Justin?
when I started building my Mark II, it was historic. And now I think it has to be proper prehistoric by the time it's built. I've got a shell there. Well, the shell's done.
That was a bit of a personal dig, that one, Tony, because Justin's been on with this project for a bit.
When was it? I was meant to get it built to go to Barbados about how many years ago?
Yeah, a few years ago.
But it's still in the same state. But I will be out in something. As I say, Dad's got one of the old factory shells. It was a brand new 106 maxi shell, so he's nearly finished that now, so they might come out and do a couple of single venues just for a bit of fun, really.
I think it'd be great to see you in that. Let's get Ryan back in a Puma.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
another little Formula Rally Championship.
Yeah. Well, I know where I'll be, but it's exactly where I was on all those events, right at the back of the field. But still, I'm not bitter about it. No, actually, do you know what? Again, like what Ryan was saying, I, for all the things, what we were talking about, that, you know, Andy probably did get wrong during that period of Formula Rally, there was so much that was right. And you think about the TV package, and obviously it was easier to televise and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, maybe we are missing something. I think what's missing still, and even though the BRC is back where we want it to be, I still think there's a lot of people, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the show, people like yourself and people like Ryan, that should be getting the brains picked. Picked more.
Yeah, there's, like you say, we just spent a few weeks away together in Croatia, and you know what it's like over a glass of red wine these days. You have putting the world to rights, it's hard to know where the right direction, but there seems to be the interest this year. But I don't know where all the money's come from this year, but I think that's another story. But it'd be great to be out in one of them, wouldn't it, Ryan?
It definitely would. Yeah, it definitely would. And there is a few of our contemporaries seem to be finding cars. So yeah, it would be good. But I think we're both about £250,000 short of it at the minute. Never mind.
Wrong. Yeah.
You and me both. But anyway, there you go. Listen, Justin. I really appreciate your time coming on, mate, and the door's always open. If you want to get anything off your chest about rallying, or indeed Ryan Champion, after 2 weeks away in Croatia with him, you can always come on and have a chat with us. But listen, it was great to have a little look back, a little look down memory lane and stuff like that. But thanks for joining us on Absolute Rally, mate.
No, thanks for that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
We'll catch you up soon. Thanks, Justin.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye. And that was Justin Dale. And again, it sounds weird because I do this now with Ryan, but before I kind of got into rallying, I didn't come to rallying quite late as a driver. I used to go and watch a lot of rallying, and I was fascinated by BRC. And so I used to go and watch the likes of Ryan and Justin, and they were kind of, even though we were a similar age, it always kind of made me think, well, I can do that, maybe not quite as well, but I think I can go and do that. And that's to some degree how I ended up doing what I ended up doing, albeit at a very limited level. But that's how I ended up. My first proper year's rallying was in the year of Formula Rally. after going to the Rally of 1,000 Cones, believe it or not.
There was definitely 1,000 cones out there.
There was 1,000 cones out there, and we spoke about it before, and there'll be people in America, Japan, New Zealand, Australia, who have got no idea what we're talking about, but you did very, very kindly put a photograph up of Martin Rowe and the Super 1600 Puma on our Facebook page, but still, there you go. Anyway, my any other business, Ryan Champion, it's not quite as succinct and thought out as what Jack Benyon's was, but I think it was something that we did need to mention. I find it really fascinating. I want to get your opinion on it, bearing in mind of what we've just been talking about, I guess, a little bit. I was looking at the runners and riders for the DMAC Drive Trophy this year in WRC, the opening rounds on Rally Portugal, and I'll run through the list, and you can laugh at the pronunciations, one or two. That's fine. I'm good with that. John Armstrong, again, a young Irishman. I've got nothing but respect for. Really, really lovely lad. He was incredibly quick the year we did the Fiesta STs together. I can lay claim to winning that championship, but it's only purely because John Armstrong didn't do all the rounds, because he absolutely annihilated me on Ulster, if truth be told. Always had pace, and he's continued that now. I think the year after, he was fastest overall on one of the stages on Ulster in an R2 car, beating DS3s and things like that. So no surprise to see John there. Really, you know, really looking forward to see how he goes. Jacob Bereski from Poland, and again, I've probably got that wrong. Nicholas Clayman from France. Gus Greensmith, of course, friend of the show. We're going to have Gus on a bit nearer the time. Karen Patel from Kenya. Oshan Price, of course, we know Oshan, been on the show before. Oscar Solberg, of course, who's Henning's son, and keeping the Solberg name going. This is the one that I wanted to ask you about, right? Bernardo Sousa.
Okay.
Having done WRC2. I think he's won rounds in WRC2.
That's quite an interesting one. I didn't realise that, actually. But yeah, there's a driver with a lot of experience. So that'll be interesting to see how he gets on. I mean, you know, as Justin was just talking about it, you do sometimes get to a point where you think, how can I keep going? How do I keep raising the money to do what I'm doing? And like you say, he was always in WRC2 cars or Super 2000 cars, as they were at the time. And that costs a lot of money in itself. So sometimes you have to think, right, I'm going to take a little bit of a step back here to try and go forward. And, you know, that's clearly what he's done in his career.
Dylan Van Wey, who I'm sure Craig Parrish sat with him early part of last year, if memory serves. But by all means, Craig, if you're listening, I do, you know, you listen, put me straight. I know you're busy right now because you're not really Argentina, but still, there you go. And Max Vatanen, of course, who is returning to the championship, which is dovetailing what he's doing in BRC at the moment. Yeah, very, again, no real surprises for me, Ryan, that list, other than, as I say, Bernardo Sousa. But as you say, I guess it comes down to budget. He'll have done a lot of the rallies. Again, we spoke time and time and time about this. He'll have a cracking set of notes for most of these rallies as well, I'm guessing.
Yes, he probably will have, although he hasn't been out for a couple of years, has he? So, you know, it's interesting as a driver how, well, two things. The stages can evolve year on year, and also your notes tend to evolve slightly. So if it's maybe 3 or 4 years since he's done these rallies, he'll probably start again. But certainly if he's got any from, you know, a year or 2 years ago, then he may well use them.
Right, you're any other business, young man.
Robert Kubica.
Oh, yes.
So it's been very quiet on the Robert Kubica front, hasn't it? And I just picked up a story earlier on that came my way, courtesy of Lee Walker, an old mate of mine, and Justin's actually, a real rally fan, Lee. And it seems that Kubica and Lotus have finally parted company, that he's no longer even on their website anymore. So is that the end of Robert Kubica and rallying? It looks that way.
I think I would be staggered if it wasn't, and I'm not wishing that, because I do think what he has done with what he has got has been phenomenal, and I mean that, and I don't say that lightly. You know, you have to remember, and we always talk about this, which is kind of annoying, the fact that I feel like we've got to bring this up to kind of almost justify, you know, he effectively drove one-handed, you know, that's kind of where we got to. But I just don't see the opportunities in rallying via a manufacturer, whether he has got sources in order to get, you know, another major sponsor like Lotus. I don't see it. I think the easy way for him to go and earn a living from driving is probably to go and do 24-hour races. I think he did one quite recently. Maybe opportunities in rallycross for him. I don't know. That could be a possibility for him. I can see other forms of motorsport taking him with open arms and probably, you know, paying him to be there.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I certainly think we'll probably see him back in circuit racing. But it is such a shame because he was, he brought genuine excitement to any rally he did because his pace could be electric. I think we're all hoping that sooner or later he was going to get a World Rally Car to the end of one of these rallies, you know, in a top three position. And I think the whole world of rallying would love to have seen that because, you know, he could clearly drive a car very, very fast. And it is a shame if that's the last of Robert Kubica in rallying. But I guess Lotus are heavily involved, obviously, with Kajtanovic in the European Rally Championship. And, you know, Kajtanovic does a great job, gets good results, and he's probably spending a fraction of the budget of what Robert Kubica was in WRC. So, if it is the end of Robert in rallying, it's a great shame. Let's hope we see him again in the future, but it does look like this might be the end of this particular chapter.
Mm. Right, and that's the end of another Absolute Rally podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Again, we keep on creeping over that hour. I think we did an hour and 38 minutes last week. When people want to chat, we don't have to stop them anymore. That's the beauty of what it is. But we will try and rein it in to kind of get to that magical hour again, certainly in the not too distant future. But listen, well done to our winners, by the way, and thanks to the guys at Dirt for hooking us up with those games. We'll get in contact with our winners, which is Matthew Gillian and Chris Campbell. We'll sort something out how we're going to get those games to you. You know where we live. If you're listening to us, I'm sure you know where we live. But share the love. Let us know where you are listening to us. I am always fascinated. At @Absolute_Rally on Twitter, and of course on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. And so there you go. So next week is going to be a slightly different program. It may even drop a little bit earlier next week because various things. I'm away, and I've also got the Pirelli Rally as well. So I'm going to talk. We're going to have a guest on the show next week, and he's a former winner of the Pirelli Rally. There you go. Are you excited, Ray?
Sounds exciting.
It does. I am going to get some kind of tuition on this program of how to be successful on the Pirelli Rally from a former winner, Ryan Champion. What could possibly go wrong?
I just can't imagine, really. I can't imagine what could actually go right.
Neither can I. But no, listen, we're going to do a Pirelli Rally preview. We're going to talk about Rally Argentina, of course we are. But listen, thanks for downloading us. And same time, same place next week, right?
Yep, we'll be here.
Perfect. And again, thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for downloading us. Thanks for sharing the love. Keep spreading the love as well. As I say, we're getting new listeners all the time. And the guys at Dirt getting involved with us really was a big help as well. So thanks to those as well. And thanks to Paul Coleman, of course, from Codemasters. So thanks for joining us. Same time, same place next week. Speak to you soon.